ओम कथाक्षयनाचान्त नमन्मोहादये नमः अनन्तानन्द कृष्णाय जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये अमृताब्धेर्नमे जीर्णिः मृषादण्डीरजन्मभिः स्फटिकाद्रैर्नमे रोगः ओ रागः स्फटिकाद्रैर्नमे रागः स्फटिकाद्रैर्नमे रागः स्वात्मसंज्ञाप्रविभ्रमैः अमृताब्धेर्नमे जीर्णिः मृषादिन्दीरजन्मभिः स्फटिकाद्रैर्नमे रागः स्वात्मसंज्ञाप्रविभ्रमैः अमृत अब्धेः काम्पाण्ड् न मे जीर्णिः मृषा दिन्दिर जन्मभिः स्फटिक आर्द्रेः कम्पाण्ड् न मे रागः स्वाप्न संज्ञा अभ्र विभ्रमैः You know, the word amrita means amrita. It's one way of taking it, that which is free of death, you know. It's free of death, it's free from time, it's immortal, it's timeless, changeless. So you can take amrita, but another word for amrita, and so you have to use it in context, is nectar, you know, like the nectar. So amrita, so sometimes when you use that word, especially in any type of poetic sense, both meanings are true, right?
What's but, the correlation between the two meanings?
I'm just saying they're different meanings, right?
Yeah.
But it just so happens that with Satchitananda, at Ananda, and they're the Sat, which is Chit, which is Ananda, it's Amrita, it's free from time, from change. It's also Ananda, which is in that has the sense of Amrita in terms of nectar. So, amrita abdehe, you know. So here it says, amrita abdehe, genitive singular, the ocean which is timeless, which is free from death, which is immortal. So the ocean which is free from time, the ocean which is amrita. So you can take it as a karmadarya, or you can take it, the ocean which is still karmadarya, the ocean which is like nectar, you know, or the ocean which is ananda, the ocean of ananda, the ocean which is free from time. So it's, and me is also genitive. So na me. So take the amritabdehe, me, for me, who am the ocean, and ocean is going to stand for, this is like a metaphor, stand for that which is infinite, you know, mm-hmm. which is the ocean of the time, the ocean which is free of death. So for me, who am an ocean which is amrita, you know, free of death, free of change, na jirnihi. Now, jirni, it means, has a couple of meanings. It has means old age, so there is no jirni for me, who am an ocean, which is ocean of immortality. Or jirnihi also means there's no death, there's no decay, there's no decrepitude, you know, for me, who am an ocean, who am a timeless ocean, right? Free of death. Amritab dehe name jirnihi. Mrsha is another word for mitya. Mrsha. Mitya. The mrsha, so the false, or that which doesn't have any intrinsic reality, which is mitya. Dindira, a dindira is foam. So like the ocean foam, the foam on an ocean. Janma bihi, janma comes from janman, it means birth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So by in the instrumental plural, so you can say for me in the genitive singular, for me this ocean of time, this time of timelessness, that this ocean that is for me, who am an ocean which is free from death, I'm likened to an ocean which is free from death. There is no old age or decay. There is no jirnihi.
Dindir is a
decay?
Foam.
Dindira. Jirnihi means like decay or death or decrepitude. There is no death for me, who am this ocean of immortality. Amritab dehe me na jirnihi. By means of, instrumental plural, by these births, by the birth of this foam, of all of this foam, which is mrsha, which is only mitya, which has no real reality.
So mrsha dindir janmabhihi is one compound?
Yes. By the births, by the janma, you could say also by the production of, but they're using janma. In terms, you say by the product of this foam, by the production of this foam, you know, which is mrsha, which is mitya. Yet mitya has no intrinsic reality. So if you're looking at this, the ocean itself, I am this immortal ocean. For me, there is no jirnihi, there is no old age or death. There's no journey by the birth or the production of these births of foam. That's the idea. It's like the births, these births that are occurring are nothing but foam on the ocean. They're mrsha. They have no intrinsic being apart from the ocean. So for me, there's nothing, you know. There's no change that happens by the birth of all of this foam, that by all of this foam, which are likened to the births, and the ocean is likened to me, who am Brahman, who am immortal, right? So births are nothing, the births are nothing but foam on the ocean. And that foam, really, in its content, has no substance apart from the ocean. So the foam is mitya, right? And mrsha means mitya. Everybody see it?
Mm-hmm.
So this is one that you can notice in this Advaita Makaranda. It's all drishtantas. Mm-hmm. You know, so really nice. So, amritab derer name jirnihi mrsha dindira janmabihi. So the janmas are the foam, okay, which are mrsha. So your birth is mrsha. Everything that is born that takes a birth is in the form of namarupa. The body is name form, right? Anything that is born is namarupa. Any namarupa is just names within names within names. They don't have any intrinsic reality. As you go to explore the nature of any name and form, you're left with, in the end, the content of the name and form, which is only sat, which is only existence. So mitya has no content of... The content of mitya, you can put it like this, the content of anything that is mitya is satyam. So we understand mitya, there can't be any mitya without satyam, because mitya, the very word, means that which depends upon some adhishtana, something else, for its being. Like, you can't imagine the mitya pot without the satyam clay, in relative example. There can't be such a thing. You know, so there is no mitya at all apart from the satyam. And so this whole creation is mitya, which means the whole creation is really nothing but, as Swamiji will say, names. It's that he only accounts for this creation in the form using the term names. Names within names within names. Instead of saying forms within forms, you know, within forms, which you could also say, if you say names within names within names, it's kind of nice because everything, every name is names within names within names endlessly. But the names, what is being named, you know, the object that is being named has no intrinsic being. That's why he just keeps with names. In the end, the only name is Ishwara. Or the only, in the end, you can say, even for Ishwara, the substance of Ishwara is Brahman. Right? That's Advaita. So names within names within names, it goes on infinitely, because as long as there's Namarupa there, it can be divided. And once you divide something, then you have a name for those parts. Right? Everything that you divide, now you have names for all of the divided parts. And then you divide those divided parts, and those are also just names. But in the end, there's nothing more there than a name. You can't get to any content. The only content, there's only one content, and that content is Brahman. So the logic for understanding that, I think, is this, is that any form, as long as you bring in the word form, then it's a form of something. Right? Like, say, if you take clay, a pot, the pot is a form of the clay, right? But now, that makes sense. So yeah, the clay now is in the form of pot. What is actually there is clay. But if you want to keep looking outside through your sense organs, then we can say, well, what is clay? And then we can divide clay up into smaller forms. And you can say, well, clay is made of these little forms. This pot is made of clay, and clay is made of, well, you can say, clay molecules, or clay shards, or clay molecules, but those are still only clay in terms of their substance, right? There's nothing there but clay, but now we call them something else. Instead of a clay pot, we call them as clay shards, or we call them as clay molecules. But really, they're just names for clay. But these are different names for clay. And then you break those up into clay atoms or whatever, clay quarks. Always, though, they are names, different names for clay. See that? Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. So they're only different names for clay. So names within names within names. Now, in the end, if we're analyzing this creation of names and forms, they really become, are, in the end, only different names for sat, for being. Because as you go on dividing every form into smaller forms, then they are again, the forms are different, right? But the content remains the same. The only content that remains the same is the being, right? Like we'll say like this, the pot form, now let me not use pot because that goes right to the clay. If I say the lamp form is, and I divide the lamp into smaller parts, then I say, you know, the lamp, metal for the lamp tubing is, the lamp wiring is, the lamp base is. The only thing that remains the same here is its being, is its isness. It is, it is, it is. And you break those into smaller parts. It is, it is, it is, it is. You break those into smaller parts. It is, it is, it is. What remains as the content, like the clay in the clay example, is only its being. And in the end, when you take the final form off, so you get into the smallest forms, what is left is only being, the isness itself. And so being is the content, and these are all, in the end, different names for being, for isness, for sat. They're all different names for sat, or sat-chit. See that? Just like if you dissect a clay pot, and you get into smaller and smaller forms, and each one of those forms has a name, they're just different names for clay. Clay in a different shape. Okay. So this is all different names for Sat, all different names for being, all different names for Brahman.
Okay. And why did he drift away from using the word form?
Because if you say there's a difference between there's a different feeling for saying all of these are different forms of Brahman to saying that all of these are different names for Brahman.
It's like a psycholinguistic thing.
Yeah. This is a name for Brahman, this is a name for Brahman, this is a name for Brahman. You dissect it into smaller things that you all have names. This is another name for Brahman, this is another name for Brahman. You can say Ishwara, this is a name for Ishwara, this is Ishwara, this is Ishwara, a name for Ishwara. Every single thing is a name for Ishwara. Why you'd say Ishwara instead of Brahman is because you're acknowledging the Maya Upadi. In the end, Ishwara also is only Brahman. It's not like Ishwara has something, is made of something else other than Brahman, or has any content other than Brahman. But Ishwara is Maya, the whole Maya, right? Which has for its being Brahman. Whereas the Jiva is within Ishwara.
Because form implies there's something else.
Implies like I have this form over here and this form over here. Mm-hmm. It's just more direct to say name, even though in the form tends to divide in your mind more than name, perhaps.
Yeah.
So you can use either. For years he used form, Nama Rupa. Right? Now you only use this name. It's fine. I like name better, actually.
Yeah, it works better.
So, Amritabdehe Name Jirnihi. Why isn't there any old age for me, for the one who is the ocean of timelessness, Amrita, of freedom, an ocean which is free of death? There's no change for me by these births of foam. The births are likened to foam, which are mithya. So when you have the foam with the water, you can see that foam really is nothing but the water, which is the self of the ocean. That's the connections, Mahavakya. Okay? Then, Spatika Ardrehe. Ardra is a mountain. Spatika is a crystal. So, Name, for me, genitive singular, who am likened to a crystal mountain, a mountain of crystal, there is no raga. The word raga can mean passion or emotion. It also means color. Raga means color. So there is no color for me, the crystal mountain, a mountain of crystal. Spatika ardrehe na me ragaha. There is no color for me who am a mountain of crystal. Swapna. Swapna means dream. Swapna means pertaining to the dream or dreamlike. Okay. Sanya abra. Abra is a cloud. Sanya means at dusk, at twilight. Or dusk as it's starting to become dark. Sanya, or as the sun is just starting to rise. Sanya is either at the daybreak when the sun is starting to come up, or at twilight when the sun is starting to go down and everything becomes a little dim. So Vibramahi, by the wanderings, or the Vibrama means to wander around in circles, or the whirling. So you can imagine by the whirling of, or the changing, the movement. Vibrama really means like whirling around or moving around in a circular way. They talk about a person, you know, being lost. Like an Ajnani, they're lost. They're just circling around, not knowing where they are. So Vibrama means to whirl around or to circle around. So by the circling around of clouds, abra, those which hold water, of clouds at twilight, at dusk, right, which are swapna, which are dreamlike. Swapna, they're just referring to mithya, right? So like mithya. So the swapna sanjabra vibramahi. So this is a famous example. It's an example that we used to... Swamiji uses this example all the time in terms of... He doesn't use it exactly like this, but he'll take like moves like this. If you have a crystal ball, you know, a spatika in your hand, and you bring like a cloth, a red cloth, near it. The spatika will as though become red, right? And so if you imagine a crystal mountain, you know, with the reflections of it, with the sun shining at dusk, when all of the colors, you know, in the sky are changing and that the clouds are swirling around, you can see the clouds and the different changes in the sky reflected in the spatika, in the crystal mountain. So the crystal mountain itself will look multicolored, you know, and also seem to contain objects. Like if there's trees around, those trees will be reflected also in the spatika, in the crystal mountain. So the crystal mountain, because in fact nothing is happening to it, it's not changing color at all. It remains absolutely clear, but appears to take on all of these changes, all of these different colors. And with raga, using the word raga, which here in terms of the spatika means colors, it can also in terms of the jiva mean emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, the ragas are the different passions, the different emotions. Mm-hmm. So these emotions tend to color yourself, just like the colors of the clouds, you know, and the shapes and colors of the clouds seem to color the spatika mountain. Like that, all of these emotions and things that are taking place, in, emotions and all things. He just used raga, so raga will bring into the mind emotion. Along with all of the vrittis, any vritti that you have, is as though changing the nature, the very appearance of the self, right? But the self is really only a spatika. It doesn't take on in any way any of the emotions or colors or fluctuations in the mind. Just like a spatika mountain, a crystal mountain, doesn't change at all, you know, no matter what is coming into its vicinity. Like that, whatever is coming into your vicinity, whether it be an emotion, you know, or a perception, or a memory, none of it in any way touches yourself. So this is a famous example, actually, used for making a person understand the upadhi. So all the things which are considered upadhis are those things which can cause the self to be taken as that. So this body is an upadhi because I can make the mistake, the ahankara, the I, can land on this. If the I can land on this so that I can say, I am this body, then this body becomes an upadhi. But an upadhi, we sometimes translate upadhi as a conditioning adjunct. Right? It's an adjunct, means it really isn't intrinsic to your being at all, but it as though conditions it, just like, you know, the red cloth conditions the crystal. So like that, this body is an upadhi because I can say I am this. So this conditions me. I mistake my conditioning adjunct is not the best, but that's how Swamiji and others translate it now. He'll translate it that way for a while, and then he'll just keep upadhi. Because it's once the term is understood, then it's just better to keep that term. So this is an upadhi. Your sense organs are upadhis. The mind, all the vrittis in the mind is an upadhi. You know, the ahankara, buddhi, citta, manas, all upadhis. Sense organs, upadhis. Organs of action, upadhis. Prana, upadhis. Physical body, upadhi. Anything that you can identify as me is an upadhi.
So is technically speaking, is the upadhi just from the standpoint of ajnanam, because it's that which lends itself to misidentification? So that's one translation I have in my mind. So then when you know the truth of your being, is it any longer considered as an upadhi, or is it just that's just the maya?
Well, you can say in this way. Just for both a jnani and a jnani, there remains the ahankar. I'm going to the store, I'm not feeling well, you know, where the word I is used in reference to the upadhi. But it's called dagdabija. It's a burnt seed. In other words, you know, you have knowledge of what you're saying. And so even though this continues to function as an upadhi, you have knowledge of what it is. Right? So you're still using the word, having the experience. Because so even with knowledge, this body still has the experience of being me. Yeah. Right? Sense organs have the experience of being me. But when we say upadhi, you can take it as it is a conditioning adjunct. But the ajnani doesn't know it's a conditioning adjunct. The jnani knows it's a conditioning adjunct. The conditioning adjunct continues to function as a conditioning adjunct, but one with knowledge, one without knowledge.
So the jnani still sees a sense of me in the body. I mean, it,
oh, yeah. You're going to have much more sense of self in the body than you are in the rug, right? Because the sukshma sharira doesn't extend. For Ishwara, this whole thing is me, right? But not in terms of, I mean, not in terms of ajnanam. But I experience this whole thing as me.
So when you notice,
but without the identification.
So when you notice the sense of me in the body, that doesn't mean that you're necessarily making a mistake about it, right? It still should appear that way.
Well, you know what you're talking about. You could say there's a difference between your experience of the body because of the sukshma sharira. You know, it goes as far as the skin. It doesn't go here.
Yeah.
You know, and so this has a more intimacy. That's why the problem, I don't have a problem identifying myself with a chair or the table. I have a problem with this body because this body is pervaded, really, by the sukshma sharira. So it has more of an intimate sense of I. Now the buddhi reflects consciousness as though this doesn't, mm-hmm. the table doesn't. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, for Ajnani, this body and mind and sense organs all enjoy the sense, they all have the meanness, the sense of identification in a sense.
Yes.
But yourself doesn't have that sense of identification. In other words, if I think of myself, I'm thinking of me, Brahman, me as I am. But then if I'm talking about my mind is thinking this, I'm thinking this, I'm feeling that. But then if I were to think of myself, I'm not going to be thinking about my mind. See what I mean? What am I? If I'm thinking about my mind, I'll say I'm feeling this and I'm feeling that. I'm thinking about my body, I'm feeling this way or that. I'm feeling that way. See, the I is just naturally used. But if I'm thinking about me, I'm not thinking about my body or my mind or my emotions or my moods. I'm thinking about me, Brahman. That's because I know who I am. But if you don't know who you are, then when you're thinking about your body, you're thinking about you. You see what I mean? There's no self there that doesn't have the superimposition that we call. The superimposition is an important term. Adhyasa, you know, means superimposition. Anyonya, other, anya, anyonya adhyasa means mutual superimposition. And so for an ajnani, this mutual superimposition is there, right? Where, and the example for mutual anyonya adhyasa is the red hot iron ball. That's the famous example, where the hotness and redness of the fire is superimposed upon the roundness and weightiness of the ball. That's one, on the one side. On the other side, the roundness and weightiness of the ball is superimposed on the fire. So fire becomes round and heavy, you know, and iron becomes red and fiery. That's the mutuality. And so when I apply that to the upadhi, to myself, I, the atma, become mortal, subject to birth and death, and of the nature of this body, mind, sense organ. So the atma takes on the characteristics of the body, mind, sense organs, and the body, mind, sense organs becomes a conscious, existent being. That's the anyonya adhyasa. And so what is actually satya mitya or, you know, awareness of the Atma and the Maya Upadhi, are not, there's no differentiation, there's no viveka there. That's the difference between, I mean, one of the main differences between a jnani and an ajnani. For a jnani, that viveka is there. And so the relationship that you have with the Upadhis is one of satya mitya. So to understand exactly what that means, satya mitya, is that when I can say, this body is me, the mind is me, the sense organs are me, the thoughts are me, right? But I am not them. It's like the clay, the pot can say, I am the clay. The pot says, I am the clay. But the clay is free of me. That's a jnani pot. But I, the clay, am free of the pot. The pot is me because it's not nothing else. So here, just in reference with sukshma sharira and all, you can say, so your immediate experience for every jiva is this body is me. It's like the pot saying, I am the clay. This body, I say, this body is me. Yet every jnani knows that. And they're correct, too. This body is me. The sense organs is me. The thoughts, the emotions are me. Right? That's true. But they don't know the other half of it. Because the satyam mitya, there's anyonya adhyasa between the satyam and the mitya. There's this mutual superimposition. So what they don't know is that I am free of the upadhi. The upadhi is not free of me, but I am free of the upadhi.
Well, okay. When you say I am free of the upadhi, when that I am has no upadhis, there's no way to make a mistake there.
There's no way to make a mistake from the standpoint of Brahman, but look who's talking.
Yeah.
The mitya upadhi is talking. So the mitya upadhi can have the mistake or not have the mistake. Right? I think one of the tricky things and what's so important that Vedanta makes so clear is the understanding of the satya-mitya. If you understand satya-mitya, then what the major understanding is that the sense of I that this body has is the I. That is true. When you say, I am a conscious being, speaking from the standpoint of the body, I, the body, am a conscious being, the conscious being that the body is Brahman. So the only problem is that for you say, I am this body, the I am conscious being is this body. It's also the rug. It's also the whole creation. But what this body mind can't say is can say, I am the conscious being, but it can't say the other half, and this conscious being that I am is totally free of this body.
Well, but the other thing is also when you say I am the conscious being, it's not as though consciousness is removed from thought. So consciousness is there, but thought is also there, and thought is not consciousness. Thought is not. I mean that kind of.
But you have to remember
thought and consciousness is.
You have to be you have to apply with the mind and the thought. You have to apply the same satya mitya. The thought, the vritti, is maya, right? The content, the vritti itself is maya, along with the rest of the creation. The vritti is maya. So the vritti has for itself, its content, Brahman. But Brahman is free of the vritti. It's just like the same clay pot thing. So whether you're looking at it from the standpoint of the physical body or the sense organs or the mind that's making the commentary on this whole thing, the mind itself is mitya, depending upon the self for its being. Its being is the self. Like the pot is the clay, the self of the mind is Brahman. So not Atma is Brahman. You are Brahman. So the self that the mind is, so that the mind can say, I am the self. Mm-hmm. Right? That's true. It is the self, but the self is free of it. Satyam mitya. Mitya doesn't have anything but the satyam for its content. It has no other content. That's why it can say, I am that.
Right. I just mean that you can never, in order to say, I am free of this, you have to be awake and thinking, and the mind has to be present. And so when you say that I am free of it, it's the mind who's talking. It's not the self who's saying.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah, but you have to remember, Kiki, it's always, if there's any talking going on, if there's any vrittis going on, that's belonging to the mind. That's it, belonging to the Maya Upadhi. But it's what is in the Maya Upadhi, say the buddhi, that has the problem. The buddhi is the one that makes the mistake using words.
Yeah.
And the buddhi is the one who gains knowledge using words, but the object of the knowledge doesn't have words. Brahman's not the one that's saying, you know, I am free. The upadhi is saying, I am free, speaking to its own truth, using words to talk about its own truth. Just like, say, the clay pot. The pot says, I am clay. It's speaking to its reality. It's pointing to its, I am really clay. You know, I am clay. But from the standpoint of me, the clay, I am totally free of the pot. This is the pot talking.
Yeah.
Right? So the knowledge that's taking place, the bondage, the moksha, you know, the pramana, the means of knowledge, all of this is taking place within Maya. But you have to remember that Maya is mithya. And so Maya, all of this talk is going on in order to make human beings who have buddhis, who are mumukshus, able to recognize the truth of themselves, you know, which is only Brahman. But the problem, there would be no problem. For Brahman, there is no problem. For me, whether, for me, the self, whether there's ignorance or not, nothing's happening to me. It's like the sun is illumining a storm, you know, or a sunny day, a clear day. It doesn't care. It's just the sun.
And it really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Well, no. Doesn't matter at all. And for me, I'm either illumining and the self of an extraordinarily painful mind or just a neutral mind, you know, or a very happy mind. For me, it doesn't matter at all. I'm exactly the same in, on all three conditions. But from the standpoint of the mind, that mind is saying, I am miserable. Can you help me? Please help me get out of this misery. You know, and so that's the mind talking, that's suffering from this anyonya adhyasa, because I'm there, you know, in that buddhi, and that ahankara is saying, I am this experience. It's like saying, I, the limitless atma, which is, I, the limitless atma, have become this experience. And so the whole teaching, it has to do with the gaining the viveka between these experiences, you know, and me, the one that is the constant in the experience. And then the question is, why am I having these miserable experiences? Well, it's because you're looking for your ananda in a place that it doesn't exist, talking to the mithya mind. It all has to be sorted out.
So is it fair to say that the ego sort of has to objectify itself? Because I'm always talking from the point of view of the pod, and the pod finally is the one who's talking. The pod has to objectify itself.
It has to recognize.
It cannot point to the clay as an object, mm-hmm. even though that's the object of the knowledge, but it has to objectify itself with viveka from the clay.
Yeah, it has to objectify itself. The ahankara becomes an object. And you have to recognize that the consciousness that you are is not objectified.
Right.
It's self-shining. And that the ahankara now changes its location from being identified with objects of knowledge that include the eye landing on, mm-hmm. all of these things are objectifiable, to where the ahankara, the aham, actually lands on the self. It's actually pointing to me, Brahman, you know. Like now, when you should just kind of notice in your own day-to-day experience, where does your aham land? I mean, really speaking, you might be saying, yeah, I'm going to the store, or I'm thinking this or that. But when you think of yourself, where does the I land? And if it's landing on an upadhi,
mm-hmm.
then you could just sit for a minute and say, you know, who am I really?
Mm-hmm.
Because and over time, as your kind of knowledge assimilates more, you know, into your day-to-day experience, the aham, when you're using it seriously about who you are and not just as a shortened version of the body does this or the mind does that, you know, the aham lands on me, the one who is always exactly the same, always constant, just the Satchitananda, me. You know, and if it's not landing there in when you're really talking about you, or even in your day-to-day experience, your own presence, then you can bring it back to that. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter what the mind or the body is doing. It's doing this, or it's doing that, it's feeling this, it's feeling that, all of that. But who are you in that? Is that, is your own, is that Viveka there? You know, no matter what the mind is doing. Is the discrimination, the natural, is there a natural differentiation? Natural clarity around your own presence as constant versus the changing.
You know, I was noticing this morning, I definitely am not there yet, I don't have it, but one thing I was noticing this morning and trying to make that Viveka is, you know, the mind is, or the brain or whatever, is always coming in. And why wouldn't it? I'll help. Let me help. I'm used to helping. I'll help you with this, you know. And you can think, and it's not, you know, because I used to have this attitude, oh, it's a bad, I've got this bad mind that's doing this. But no, this mind is trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's used to it, you know. And it's like, okay, you don't have to help here. Don't help. Lay down.
Take a break.
But it's difficult to come to it's been difficult for me to be compassionate towards the mind, you know, because it wants to help.
But you
let
know,
me help you here.
But the mind, the buddhi being having the nature of wanting to help, is the type of buddhi we want. And mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't. The buddhi can be very helpful and a good friend. We want the buddhi to be helpful and a good friend, you know. But still, from the helpful, good friend buddhi, you need to be able to recognize itself, right? Because in the end, it's your own nature that is the very swarupa, very nature of the one who is helpful. It's also the nature of the one who's not helpful. But the one...
why does it seem so tricky? It's a tightrope walk kind of thing, you know? It's hard to get...
You know why? Satyamitya has that nature of being a tightrope because from the one stand... It's because you have to understand both sides of the coin in a way in Satyamitya. You have to see that the clay is pot, the pot is clay, right, and that the pot really is clay, mm-hmm. and the clay really is free of pot. Mm-hmm. The clay doesn't care at all about the pot. There's a, for its standpoint, there's only clay there. It doesn't make any difference what the nama rupa is. There's only clay there, but the pot, its form is what it is, but it actually is only clay. And so that has to be seen. It's important to see it because then you can understand that I. Body, mind, sense organs, where I say I, that I is free. That's why, you know, the body isn't free. You know, it's subject to age and disease and death and limitation. So is the mind, subject to continual change and different moods and emotions. It's hardly free.
Mm-hmm. And there comes a time where the body won't be here.
Yeah, but just like when you have a body, dream body, and you wake up from the dream, you realize that the body, the truth of the body, is the self. What you're attached to and what you consider to be the body is the self. Just like what you consider to be the pot is the clay, what you consider to be the body is the self, what you consider to be the mind is the self. And in fact, the body is continually changing, the mind is continually changing. All just coming and going, every part of it, coming and going. But what is really there is the self. You don't want to lose your body means you don't want to lose yourself. You know, the clay doesn't want to die because it doesn't want to be separated from the pot. The pot doesn't want to die because it doesn't want to be separated from the clay. But it can't be separate from the clay. The only thing that's there is clay. And so your attachment, you are attached to yourself. But you think that yourself is the body. And so then, you know, you're attached to yourself. You think that yourself is the mind, and so you're attached to the mind.
Yeah.
You know, or even you think yourself, it's this type of thought versus this type of thought. That's a different darshana, you know. It's a different philosophical that when this thought is there, then I'm here.
It all resonates now.
That's why this viveka between the satya and mitya, because what's tricky is that yourself always is there and it is the truth. Totally present, pervasive too, because the very being of absolutely every experience that you have, every single experience that you have. That's why you can say, I'm so unhappy, or I'm so agitated, or I'm so happy, or whatever it is, because the anyonya adhyasa. There is no distance between your being and the experience, but you have to, the viveka allows you to recognize that you're never changing in that experience, which you are the self of. And it doesn't matter how good or bad the experience is. It doesn't make any difference from the standpoint of you.
And so do you give yourself, when that viveka is there, do you give your mind and body just objectively as any other mind and body as being part of Ishvara?
If you're thinking
else's.
About that, I mean, that's how we kind of revel in this knowledge. You know, it's when you are not engaged in something else.
Right.
Then you can be just reveling in the wonder of Ishvara. In which this body, mind, sense organs, everything about you and all of your experience and all levels is all interconnected and part of Ishvara. You know, all of your past going all the way back to past lives. You know, and everybody you know, they all go back into past lives, and that network is all still there. And out of that network of life after life after life has produced this conglomerate, this mess. You know? And here it is, you know? It's all Ishvara, the unfoldment of Ishvara. You know? So how many lifetimes have we all been involved with each other? That's why you can, even when you go to foreign countries, how many times have you run into somebody that you know? Well, that's ridiculous. It's like it's like a needle in a haystack, and there they are because of the interconnected. We're interconnected. You know, it's such a neat thing, but it's also helpful to kind of contemplate on it, because when you're engaged with somebody in a positive and negative ways. You know, for whatever reason, you know, there's probably some history there that you may not be aware of. And maybe you'll be able to resolve that history in this life. Who knows? You know, it's kind of, you know, why are you so much at ease with some people and other people you have a hostile relationship? All of this stuff is all karma, you know, to be worked through. You know, there's this one verse, I forget it in the Sanskrit, but the lives are likened, jivas are likened to two logs in the ocean, like two pieces of driftwood in the ocean coming together, and then the waves hold them together for a period of time, right? The force of the waters, the waves, will hold those two pieces of driftwood together for some period of time. And then the waves will separate them and they'll go off into their own way. So what if you look at your karma, you know, as bringing these two jivas together for who knows how long? It's not necessarily one life or part of one life or many lives. There's something in the karmas that bring you together, and then at some point, it could be lifetimes later, you know, those karmas are resolved and you go your way.
Where is that from?
It's a verse. Actually, I think I ran across that verse in Bhandarkar, one of the Bhandarkar sentences. I could probably look through and find it, and I don't know what the source is.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. But with Bhandarkar, all of those sentences are real, they come from a source. That's why I like Bhandarkar. Except for the first ones, for the first lessons. Yeah.
So those two pieces of driftwood aren't using their own volition to come together.
No.
The wave of their karma.
Yeah. I mean, just think, it's a huge universe, you know? And then in this, and that has gone over a huge expanse of time. And the people that we actually come in contact with in our lifetime are really very few in number compared to, you know, how many people there are. So those people you have some sort of karma with. Even say people that live in the same city, they're very close to you. All of them, you know. They're because they're in the same city compared to the whole world, in the same city at this time and place. That's, you know, there's some way that our karmas are connected. It's interesting. I like to think of it that way. It makes sense also, you know, but yeah.
It's also nice to think of everything, not just everything positive, but also everything negative in a somewhat dispassionate way. And not just be, you know, oh, this is so wonderful, well, this is also so terrible. And then to have some dispassion for both of those.
Dispassion or compassion?
Dispassion. I meant dispassion, not, I guess compassion too, but I wasn't thinking of that.
Objectivity.
Yes.
One woman years ago, she was at the, name is Barbara Thornton. She's been with us for a long, long time. She lives up in Oregon somewhere. She's a lawyer. She helped us with the first course and she was in AA and was also one AA sponsor and had done a lot of work for many years with that. She had been an alcoholic herself at one time and got out of it and became very involved in being a sponsor and helping others with it. She's a really amazing, brilliant, brilliant woman. And they used to have an AA, something that said, something that went like this. I wish I could remember exactly. But say if you had some sort of a riff or tension with somebody, negative, then there was some sort of an apology that you made to yourself, you know. It was as though seeing that person as part of yourself and apologizing to yourself in that form. It was something in AA, like, you know, I'm so sorry for whatever happened. To me. I'm sorry for whatever I did to you or something like that, but it was seeing me in that form, something like that.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I heard one this week that I thought was nice. I'm sure everybody's heard of it. Something about viewing the situation from 30,000 feet. Gain objectivity.
Yeah. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om